Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products and businesses, real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here is your host, Elizabeth.
Hello, everyone, and happy Friday, and thank you so much for listening to the Best Ever You Show, and thank you to everyone at Blog Talk Radio for your support for our show. Everybody, all you listeners out there and everybody sharing the show has well over a million downloads now and is just chugging along and doing its thing, and we're really thankful to our very interesting guests who donate their half hour to us and share their love and joy and shine with us. And today we have a really, really, she's a shining example of all of that. We have Fran Kappa with us, and she'll be here in a minute. She's a comedian, motivational speaker. She has more books, 18-time author, spokesperson, TV host, comedy producer. And then we're going to have to ask her about this one because she's a 6-time world record holder. So we'll find out more about that in just a minute, and all about her. Her website is FranCapo.com for anyone listening along. And I'm also right now going to open up the chat room. So if you want to chat with us live, you can do that, or give us a call here at 714-868-0220 if you have any questions. And just a couple more things before we bring Fran on. Our show is sponsored by The Infinite Universe. That's theinfiniteuniverse.com. It's a great, beautiful line of handbags. They're absolutely gorgeous. Each handbag is made with an element of stone and an element of wood. Very interesting. The owner of the company is Karen Hendricks, and I invite you to check out their website at theinfiniteuniverse.com. And then one more thing. I've got a book coming out. I'm really excited about it. I'm signed with Hay House. And the book comes out April 14th, 2014. It's called Percolate, Let Your Best Self Filter Through. It's in pre-order right now wherever books are sold. Really excited about that. It's just an honor to be signed with Hay House. And then my dear friend, Dr. Katie Eastman, is a contributing author to the book, kind of a co-author in a way. She oversaw most of the project and contributed a lot to the coffee breaks, and she's just a really good friend, and we had a lot of fun writing the book together. So anyway, that's my housekeeping news there, and I really want to bring Fran on. I might be giving her a run for the world's fastest talker. I'm not sure. I don't know, Fran, how am I doing?
You're doing really good. I was like, oh, wow, she keeps going, okay, one more minute. I go, wow, she's got a lot of stuff in there in that 1 more minute.
excellent.
Very good. Sorry if it gave you a heart attack there.
It's funny. We were, before the show started, I think I was typing away an email, and it was like, oh, goodness, there's only 4 minutes to the show. And then Fran got on the show at about maybe like a minute or so before the show. So we were scrambling both a little bit. But we're here, and that's what matters. And that's it.
And I love always letting people know the behind the scenes, because it's like sometimes people go, wow, things just like always seem to go your way. I'm like, oh, no, that's not it. It's just a matter, no matter what happens, you just keep plugging ahead. That's it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I couldn't agree with that more, that's for sure. You never know what's going to happen in a day, do you? It's always interesting.
Exactly, and that's the thing that I love about life. I mean, for example, you mentioned a bunch of the different things that I've done, and obviously I'm talking slow now. I could give a sample of my fast talking later, but just to give you an example of, like, you never know what's going to happen, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I'm getting ready for Thanksgiving, and I get an email out of the blue from a PR company in New Zealand saying, hey, we found you. We're doing a launch of this new product. The thing is, the product's, you know, launching December 9th, and I know this is crazy, but would you be willing to come to New Zealand? And then we started working out the details, and it wasn't until the following Wednesday we figured everything out. And then 2 days later, I was on a plane to New Zealand for a week, and I just got back. And I was like, okay, nowhere prior to that Wednesday did I say, next week I think I'll go to New Zealand. I mean, that just wasn't even in my radar, you know. And yet I went. We did the top radio shows. It was for a company called 2 Degrees, because they have this new program, this shared everything program, which is new to New Zealand, even though we have it here in the United States. And they wanted wanted to have someone, because Americans apparently talk five times more on their phones than Kiwi people do, so they wanted me to go there and teach them what to talk about on their phone. So I was literally running around the country. I was doing blackwater rafting. I was zorbing. I was there, and I was talking on the phone everywhere. It's awesome.
You know,
I mean, that's
so
the type of stuff I love to do.
Well, I noticed in your social media that you were leaving for New Zealand, and I'm like, what's she doing now? I can't wait to ask her about this on the radio. And it was so spur of the moment. I'm like, I don't think that was even planned, and there she goes. What makes you fearless in a way? Because so many people live in fear.
Well, the thing is this. It's, you know, everybody always goes, oh, my gosh, you bungee cord jump, you scuba dive with sharks, you fly combat aircraft, you do all these things. That's amazing that you have no fear. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. I have fear. I have fear on all these things. But this is my philosophy. Besides, you know, the initial one that my mom taught me of nothing is impossible, and my dad taught me to always find the humor in life. So between being a motivational speaker and a stand-up comic, I'm always like, well, if I do something and it works, it becomes part of the motivational speaking. If it doesn't, it becomes part of the stand-up comedy. But it's a win-win either way. But the real basis for it is I say, okay, so here's the thing. You know, it's not a matter of fear nothing. It's fear it, but do it anyway. Because the philosophy that I live by is, okay, so people are scared to do something, whatever it is, public speaking. And then they're worried, oh, my gosh, I can't speak in public. Oh, no, I can't speak about it. And they worry about it a day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, a month, a year. Meanwhile, had they just been scared and did it, it would have been over. And then they would have gotten the rewards. The person who's scared to do something and does it lives with that fear for the entire time that they're scared of it. The person that lives, that has the fear and does it, yeah, they're scared and it'll come to a little bit of a height, but they do it, it's over, and it's either worse than they thought, better than they thought, just as scary as they thought. But either way, it's now an accomplished thing. So I'm like, well, if I'm going to fear it, instead of all this worrying in my head, just get it over with.
You know, I think you finally put into words for me one of the ways I feel about life, and that's, Do it, and if it doesn't work out, it becomes part of the comedy act.
Exactly. Just do it. Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, that's the problem, is people take themselves too seriously sometimes. I mean, you could be serious about your business. You could be, you know, but you don't have to be somber about it. Oh, no, don't joke about that. Oh, for goodness sakes. My dad, when he was, I wasn't going to bring this up right this second, but I might as well because we're talking about joking. But, I mean, at one point in time, my dad, had cancer, and he said to me, he was 4-stage cancer, and he said, listen, I want you to write a book about my life. And I'm like, Dad, you know, I don't know. And then he goes, no. And because my dad had one brother that was a highly decorated police officer and the other one that was in the mob. And so I was like, Dad, I don't know. And so, you know, he tells me to write this book. And he's like, you know, giving me the book. I mean, while he's dying, he's like telling me this book. And so my thing was I wanted to do it before he died. But the whole time that he was doing all this stuff, he actually made me go out and buy a chia pet to see his hair would grow back faster because he had the chemo. He would joke about everything. He goes, listen, when I'm gone, my body is like a coat. He says, you know what, I'm just taking off the coat. The spirit's still here. And so we were joking about things that people were like, how could you joke about that? Your dad thought. My dad was the one that was telling me, you know, please, I don't want this. I want you to make jokes at the funeral. Now, everybody was like, this is crazy. But he didn't want me to make jokes about him. Hey, he looks terrible in the casket. I mean, not those type of jokes. I mean, you know, he was talking about life. So I had everybody get up and tell stories of the funny things they remembered about my dad's life. I was like, look, we're all here to celebrate. Now, the funny thing was, you know, obviously when I brought my dad, I had him home on hospice. And at one point, you know, because my dad, like I said, he had one brother, you know, the highly decorated police officer, and the other one that was in the mob. So he did a couple of things. He spent some time in jail. And the book, Almost a Wise Guy, is about his life and all the crazy things that he did. So the beginning of the book I wrote, the names have been changed to protect the author because I wasn't going to take a chance in case any of the mobsters were still alive.
The whole time you're saying that, I'm like, you're going to write a book about that?
Yeah, and I was like, it was actually very funny because I lived in Howard Beach at the time, which is where John Gotti lived. And John Gotti's, Peter Gotti actually had a whole deli, you know, and bakery near the corner. And the local reporter did a story on me, and I'm like, oh, no. So one day I walk into the local Walmart, and all of a sudden, and just like out of a movie, Peter Gotti is sitting in the chair backwards, you know, like, you know, the way they always sit backwards, leaning over the top. And he goes, "Psst, Capo." And I pretend I don't hear him. He's going, "Capo." And so I turn around. I go, "Me, Mr. Gotti?" He goes, "Yeah, come here." I go, "Yes, Mr. Gotti." He goes, "I heard you wrote a book." I go, "Well, I've written a couple of them." And he goes, no, "I heard you wrote a book of family." I said, "Yeah, about my family." And he goes, "Anybody in there I know?" And I go, I don't know, Mr. Gotti. I don't know who you know. I don't know. And he goes, "You want me to do a book signing in the bakery?" And all I could think of is, oh, man, I'm going to owe this guy for life because he's going to sell a bagel and a book. So I'm like, oh, no, that's fine. I'm okay. I go, "Actually, I really don't want anybody to know about the book. It's kind of like a secret." Yeah. So, I mean, but that's the thing. And even when people say, like, you know, it hasn't been the best few years for our country. And, you know, people are like, you know, it's times are rough, times are hard. But no matter what, you can always find something to be grateful for. And you can always find something to have a sense of humor about, no matter what.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I live every day. I wake up and good morning gratitude. And there's definitely something funny somewhere in that day. Many things funny, especially as a mother of four teenage boys.
How many?
I have four teenage boys.
Oh, I thought you said 14. I mean, not that four is little, but
I have one of those.
14.
That's a 14-year-old. Yeah. No, I don't have 14 kids. Just four.
Yeah, really.
Like
that's
I have 14 kids some days.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah, it's there. Okay, so let's talk about, gosh, I'm going to go like this to your bio and just point at something. Okay. I just did that. Okay, it pointed to a polar bear den. You crawled in a polar bear den? Are you crazy?
Well, one of the things, now this is funny that you say that, one of all things, because I love adventure, as you can tell. Another one of the books I wrote is called Adrenaline Adventures, 50 different adventures you could do in a day or a weekend. And it wasn't like I said, I'm going to do these adventures because I'm writing a book. It's like I did the adventures. People would ask me, where'd you do it? And then I decided, well, let me put it all together in one book so people could find out. So one of the adventures I decided to do, and usually what comes about is I'm looking for something, and then something will just pop up on the computer, and I'm like, oh, what's that about? And then all of a sudden, once they get it in my head, forget, my boyfriend says I'm relentlessly relentless. Oh, I'll remind you afterwards. I mean, I should have told you to play my – I have a theme song called Adventure Girl that I think your listeners would have gotten a kick out of. It's on my website, but it literally describes my whole life in that, and that is one of the world records I hold. But anyway, so the polar bear den. So I'm Googling and I'm looking something up, and it says, go to Churchill, Canada on a tundra vehicle and see, you know, polar bears up close. Now, polar bears are the only bears that come out of hibernation carnivorous. Most of the other bears come out of hibernation and they are vegetarians. This bear also is the only bear that does not need provocation to attack. So you don't have to be like even looking cross-eyed at its kid or anything, or, you know, trying to steal its food. It just kind of looks at you, sniffs, and it's like, eh, I don't like that human. I'll attack.
Yeah.
So part of the adventure was you go on the tundra vehicles, you get to take pictures with them and stuff. But then I read this other thing that said, take a helicopter ride over where the bears roam and will land, and if you dare, crawl in a polar bear den. So I convinced my boyfriend, he goes, I'll tell you right now, I'm not crawling in the den. I said, no, I'll crawl in the den. So we get there, and there's these guys with tranquilizer guns, or, you know, not to kill them, just to tranquilize them. So I said to them, I go, well, this is a den with no bear in it, right? And he goes, I don't know, you have to crawl in and find out. I go, oh, no, you have the gun. You need to crawl in and find out. And he goes, it's your adventure. I go, okay, how do you know that this is a den that's been abandoned? He goes, because we monitored the dens. I go, okay, but did you monitor it, like, last night? You know, like, what if the bear all of a sudden said, oh, I forgot my pocketbook. Yeah, in my other den, you know? So anyway, I crawl in there. Let me tell you something. I do not know how a mother bear and two baby cubs could possibly fit in there, because I crawled in head first, and then there was two other people that did it also, and they all crawled out backwards, like, you know, with their butts mm-hmm. coming back out. So I said, well, if a mother bear could sleep in here with the two bears, I should be able to turn around. Oh, my gosh. I literally got stuck for a few seconds. I was like, oh, and so I'm like trying every angle, like putting my hands up on the ceiling and trying to turn, and because I wanted to be able to crawl out, because of course I didn't crawl in there by myself. I crawled in there with two of my books so I could take a picture of me with my books crawling out the polar bear hole. So that's actually one of the pictures that's on my website of me holding the two books in when you see me in the den, in the wolf's like a dirt hole, that's the polar bear den.
Oh, that's brave. I'm glad there were no bears in there.
Well, you know, this is how I look at everything that I do. I go, okay, let's see. This is a tour company. They're going to want to make sure they have other tour people go, so they're not going to do anything that's going to get people killed, because then nobody will come to their tour company and they won't make money. So I always say these are calculated risks. They have to make it sound dangerous enough so you're excited, but not so dangerous where they only have, you know, one customer.
Exactly. That brings me back to this moment. I was sitting in a movie theater. It must have been 25 years ago or something. And it was some movie with bears involved. And the main story, the main character of the whole entire movie was a bear. And that bear, in the first 5 minutes of the movie, got too close to the edge of the cliff. And there were people sitting behind me going, oh, my God, is the bear going to fall off the cliff? And I'm like, the movie's got an hour and 30 minutes more to go. It's not going to happen. I turned around and said that.
Exactly, because you do a logic thing. Oh, this is funny. I just told the bear story, and then all of a sudden somebody called in, and I looked down to see the screen, and it said PETA. I said, nobody shot the bears. Let me just let you know right now, the bears were fine. Nobody was hurting bears. I love animals.
I actually raised
money for PETA a long time ago. I did a whole fundraiser called Stand Up for Animals, so just in case.
Yeah, exactly. No worry, folks. We're not doing any harm to anybody.
No, it was unoccupied.
You.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. If you were going to describe who you are and what you do in a few sentences, what would you say? That's a hard one. Your bio goes on and on and on.
I would say that my goal in life is to motivate, captivate, and educate people through humor, motivational speaking, my writing, and my adventures.
And how did you know? This is a common question I ask to our guests. Did you know you were this way when you were a little kid? Like when you were
okay.
Go back to like when you were four. Were you like, you know? You know what I mean? Just totally intrepid.
Well, you know what? Well, at four, I don't think I was conscious if I was this way, but I do know a couple of things. You know how your mother always keeps a book of, like, your sayings when you were little and all these things? So I was looking at one of the books that I had that my mom kept, and it had said in it, your favorite saying was, nothing is impossible. So I guess, I know I picked it up from my mother, because my mother used to always sign everything PMA, which means positive mental attitude. And the other thing was that I know. Remember this one thing my mother did, which at the time didn't make sense to me, or I didn't understand what she was doing, but now looking back on it, it was brilliant. She, I remember I wanted a Bam Bam doll, you know, from Flintstones, Pebbles and Bam Bam, and I wanted this Bam Bam doll. And my mom said to me, and I had this little doll high chair with other dolls in it, and my mother said, every day for 1 week, I want you to pretend that the Bam Bam doll is in that chair. So I was like, why do I have to pretend the doll's there? I want the real doll. But every day I would pretend that Bam Bam doll was there. And then, I don't know, the fifth day, sixth day, seventh day, whatever, she put the real doll in there. And my mother told me back then it was because I visualized. She didn't use the word visualized. She actually said because I I think she did use the word visualize. She said that because I pictured in my mind, that's what made it come true. So she was teaching me manifestation, the law of attraction, mm-hmm. which back then my mother was, you know, into hypnosis and, you know, metaphysics and all that stuff. But, you know, I was little. I was 5. What did I know about that? I just knew, hey, I pictured this doll, and then the doll appeared.
That's so cool. What now? You cherish your parents like I cherish mine. I'm in the middle of 11 kids, and I totally cherish my mom and dad. They do the same thing. They taught me never give up and all these amazing things. And my dad's a stroke survivor and a kidney cancer survivor. And they've been married for 40 years, and they just go through anything and everything together, and they do it with grace and wisdom. I mean, it's just amazing what they do. And it sounds like you have kind of that same thing. What did your parents do?
No. You know, and well, my mom and dad did divorce when I was like three, when I was in third grade. So they did not stay together the whole time. Although they did stay friends my entire lifetime. They were, I mean, like good friends. My dad initially was a truck driver, and then he wound up having a construction business. And at times when I wasn't doing my stand-up, he was also doing these transit, they call them snowbirds, like people that go from Florida, New York to Florida during the winter. And so my dad had this service where you would actually pick up the cars, drive them to a trailer, the trailer would trailer the cars down to Florida, then they would have them, and then when they were ready to come back, they would do the same. So I did I helped him with the accounting when he was doing that type of stuff. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom up until my son was in school, and then she became a teacher's assistant at a nursery school. But mainly most of my life, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, but she literally was the most supportive mother anybody could ever have. And then obviously I hoped, you know, and my son and I are very close, and I translated that to my son, because on his crib when he was only 8 months old, well, actually, when he was born, but I mean, I had it on the crib. I started reading it to him every night. I had 3 things written on the wall, and it said, God guides me always. I am a winner, and nothing is impossible. And even though I knew he couldn't speak yet, I figured there's enough negative input in the world, so I wanted to make sure he got that message constantly put into his head. And so even when he was like in sixth grade, instead of reading him books like, you know, I mean, he read the regular books too, you know, Dr. Seuss and all the classics, but I was reading him things like Ogmandino, you know, and Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And the teacher was like, what reading list is this from? And I was like, listen, these are the books that people have to read when they're 30 years old. Why wait? You know? Yeah, so I figured just let him read them now, and then he'll already have this. And so my son does a majority of the adventures with me. Like he climbed Kilimanjaro with me. He's gone bungee jumping, zip lining, whale watching. I mean, sleeping with wolves. I mean,
favorite. Oh,
I love whale watching.
Sorry to interrupt you, but you said whale, and my ears perked up. I'm like, oh, I love whales.
Oh, then you would have loved this, and maybe your listeners, too. This is actually a cool thing. The article I wrote is actually coming out next week on this, on Traveling Mom, which is one of the websites I write for. But I just went with my friend to celebrate our birthday. We went to the Georgia Aquarium, and we went shark diving. So it's the Georgia Aquarium is in the Guinness Book as one of the largest aquariums with a variety of fish, and it's the only place on the Western Hemisphere that has 4 whale sharks in captivity. They're young,
really?
And you go in the tank and you dive with the whale sharks. If you go, tell them Frank Capo sent you.
I've got to do that in my lifetime. I'm not kidding. I am so fascinated by that. That's so bizarre. You're talking about whale sharks. That's the one I'm fascinated with most.
Oh, my God. And then the cool thing about whale sharks, my article has all this. I'll send you the link when the article comes out, and then you could share it with your fans. The whale shark's mouth, well, then you know if you're a fan of them, is 5.5 feet wide. That's about as big as I am, tall. But its throat is only a quarter, the size of a quarter. So my son was like, I can't believe you're doing this, Mom. I'm like, Spence, the worst that happens is it could gum me to death. It can't even swallow me. You know, I mean, it's throat the size of a quarter. You know, but it was the most awesome experience. You know, I just like, well, my son is so funny. He's used to doing all the stuff with me, but he always gives me the what I'll call the logical point of view first. Like, I'll run to his room, and I'll say, Spencer, I know what I want to do for my birthday. We're going to sleep with wolves. And he'll like, I'll pay for you to sleep with wolves. I go, we don't have to spoon them, for goodness sakes. We're just going to go there. They're going to be outside the tent. And then I have to convince him, like talk to him, Spence, it's going to be fine. He's like, Mom.
He's great.
He's adventurous. And like, I literally, this is, I remember when Survivor, you know, the show Survivor,
mm-hmm.
at one point in time, I think it was the third show, they were supposed to have where the winner would go to the moon in the Mir shuttle. And then at that point, the Mir shuttle was brought down and instead it was at the bottom of the ocean. But anyway, I go running into the room. I go, Spencer, guess what? I just filled out this application for Survivor and the winner gets to go to the moon. And turned around, looked at him, and he goes, okay, Mom, I've put up with all your adventures. I draw the line when you leave the planet. And I was like, Spencer, no fun. But actually, I always tease him. He is so much, he comes with me on so many of the adventures, and we just have the best relationship. I'm like, wherever he is, like, he's like, Mom, I'm in Peru. Do you think I should go to Machu Picchu? I go, if I taught you nothing else, you explore the world. Go out there. Go to Machu Picchu. You know?
Oh, yeah. I've got a 12-year-old. He just won the sixth grade geography B.
Very
yesterday.
Good.
Yeah, it was trippy. He's like, Mom, guess what? I won the geography bee. Like, oh, goodness. So he's got to do the school geography bee on January 10th. But he's just like that. Just so, like, since he's been little, he's read Discovery Magazine and, I mean, every Nat Geo, all these different magazines that he can read. And he's just like a sponge absorbing the information. But he always tells me of all these different places he wants to go. And he said probably a few months ago, he's like, I want to go see the Great Wall of China. I said, okay, well, I'll work on that. I don't know if I can do that right now, but we'll get there. And he goes, no, you don't understand. I want to see it from space. Like, oh,
wow. I love it. I love it. You know what? He would love, because the articles I write for Traveling Mom are all adventure articles, but different things. Like, for example, during the summer, I went literally in Dover, Vermont. They have a treasure hunt where they give you clues, and it takes people usually 3 days to find it. It's not that expensive, and that's what my book Adrenaline Adventures is about. It's all things that people could do with their families that you could do in a day or weekend, all things that don't cost a lot of money but are kids really like. Space camp, I mean, panning for gold. I mean, all things that don't cost a lot, but that people don't know where to find these adventures. So, but I have a lot of articles on, as Travel Adventure Mom there, your son could find things that might not cost you quite so much,
so
like getting a space shuttle
space
for him. Yeah, that might be a later on adventure,
Yeah, one of my favorite spots, well, I love giraffes, too. And have you ever been to the? I don't know if you have or not, but have you ever been to the Wisconsin Dells? It's kind of a fun area in the Midwest. It's called the Wisconsin Dells. It's a great family area. They have.
No, I haven't.
If you get a chance, I'm from the Midwest, so I know it well. They have giraffes that you can feed, and they kind of almost come up to you. I have this great picture of my sons, and the giraffes are like licking their side of their face and headbutting them and everything, and
oh,
I love
wow,
stuff like that where the
awesome.
Adventure involves animals, and like, so I do a little bit of that with my kids too, where, you know, we take them different places and stuff, and it usually is something that involves either like hiking in the woods or something like that, or like animals. And another thing I love to do with SeaWorld and feed the dolphins.
I've taken my son where you do the dive with the dolphins, because I had him learn how to dive. So we went with the dive with the dolphins and then the swim with the dolphins. And then I also had him in Acomal, Mexico. They have where you can go in the caves, cavern diving. I mean, you have to be a certified diver, you know, but you go in the cenotes. But animal encounter-wise, it's funny because for my birthday party, I always like surprising my guests. And so when they come over, they never know what to expect. And we live on this big hill where there's a lake in the back, like I'm staring at the lake now. And so I put a 150-foot slide, and then like 2 hours into the party, I had my friend who owns some llamas come over. And one person just goes, there's llamas on your lawn.
Yard.
And I'm like, yeah,
yes,
yeah. And he
are.
Goes, no, no, there's just like llamas. And I go, yeah. So everybody took pictures with the llamas. And then after the llamas left, we were doing the birthday cake. And then right as we finished singing, another friend of mine came in, and she has this giant barn owl. I mean, it's like 2.5 feet. And so people are going, Fran, there's an owl, a lady with an owl at your door. I'm like, oh, yes, that's the next lady that's coming in.
What fun. All right, in my lifetime, that's the second thing I want to do then is come to one of your birthday parties, I think.
You're going to definitely have to, because each year I have to make it better and better. Last time we had people learning how to eat fire, and then this time we had people bending spoons with their minds.
Oh, that's awesome. Can you actually
tomorrow night, actually, I'm having a party. It's a spiritual holiday party where I'm having crystal bowl singing, which is actually aligned with the chakras.
Oh, that's neat. Tell me more about that. That's cool. What is that?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if your guests are familiar with it, but, you know, there's everybody has, like, seven chakras in their body.
Yep.
Okay, and, yeah, chakras. So, like, there's a head chakra, throat chakra, heart chakra. And think of your body as, like, a tuning fork. And so when people meditate, a lot of people always know that sound of om, om. But when you think of it, it's that vibration that makes the body feel very comfortable, right? So when you think everything in the universe is in a state of vibration, and everything resonates with a different vibration, and some vibrations make you feel good and some don't. Now, the chakras, the bones, the organs, the cells in the body all possess a different resonant frequency. And when a part of your body is vibrating at a tune, then that's when they say that you're not in harmony with the rest of things, and then that's when you get physical, and you know, you've heard people use the word dis-ease as opposed to disease, you know, the lack of ease, dis-ease. And so a crystal singing bowl meditation is it's like a meditation therapy session, sort of, in that what it does is assists the body in creating a healthy state through the process of the sounds of the tones of the singing bowls. And each bowl has a different resonance that they vibrate with, and they're made of the silicone quartz. And the body naturally has an affinity to quartz because many of the parts of the body are composed of a crystalline substance. The bones, the blood, the DNA are all crystalline in their structure, and so is parts of the brain, even on a molecular level. So the quartz is able to maintain the balance of the electric magnetic energies between the poles in your body. And so I figured to have people come here, and they're going to listen to it because people are too stressed during the holidays, and I just wanted to give a gift to my friends of de-stressing for an hour.
That's neat. That's thoughtful and educational and all sorts of things all in one. Very kind.
Thank you.
A lot of people don't know that about chakras either, so it's puts the information out there more and more and more, doesn't it?
The thing is, people just sometimes have a tendency to take advantage. You know, I have a body, I use it, I eat, I drink, I sleep, I smoke. You know, I mean, people just kind of, that's my body, and they don't really think about it. You know, the body's the thing that stays with you your entire life. So you want to make sure it's in good condition, but just not, you know, want to keep it tuned. I mean, just think of a car. People tune a car. They tune a guitar. They tune up their computer. But how often do people take time to tune up themselves?
Good point. I couldn't agree with you more. I was having that chat with somebody yesterday. They asked me, there was a client of mine, a coaching client of mine, asking me, what medical doctor does this? And I said, you know, she was like wanting to go to the doctor for something else, and I said, you know, I love medical doctors and everything, but I think we need to back up a little bit and take a look at mind, body, spirit, the way you're eating, the way you're exercising and everything, because even if you go to that doctor, if you're not doing all the stuff in the background, you know, you're probably in like a vicious cycle
Well, that's part of the, I mean, because a lot of times when I do coaching also, I mean, people will say, like, how do you stay so positive and, you know, when things are going bad? And what I do is teach people to you know, reframe, focus on what you want, not on what you fear, you know? And, you know, it's kind of like if you're in a room at a party and you look in one corner and people are arguing, you go, oh, man, this is a horrible party. And if you look in the other corner and people are laughing, you go, wow, that's a great party. Yet both are happening at the same place. So it's just a matter of where you aim your focus. And then, you know, I know, I just like you, I respect Western medicine, but I also believe in Eastern medicine. And I just believe that it needs to be a combination of both, because there's times that, yes, I do want to get an antibiotic, but then there's times I'm like, no, my body's going to break down from having too many antibiotics, you know what I mean? So you just have to balance, you know, like some people have high blood pressure or whatever, or, you know, they have too much cholesterol. Well, you could take red yeast rice. That's a natural statin, you know, instead of taking, you know, Crestor and things like that. So I love being in touch with people who, you know, also know these things. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I couldn't agree with you more.
And that's why, and I think just like you, it sounds like your program is very diverse, and that's the same thing. I write articles on all different things, and when I do my motivational speaking and I'm hired to go into different companies or do a one-on-one, it basically is for that same thing. I mean, I'm also a certified hypnotherapist. I mean, but the main thing is, like, I go in, I could talk about anything from humor and business speaking and everyday life and how, you know, humor actually relieves stress and the endorphins in the body the same as a physical workout does. Or I could talk about creativity and marketing or Dare to Do It, teaching people how to get overcome their fears. And so that's why I have a wide variety, because my interests are wide, but I've also studied wide, and I just love being able to help people see them laugh and making them be able to go after their dreams without, you know, getting to the end of life and going, oh, I wish I would have. You know, that does you no good.
Is it hard to be as brilliant as you are? You can tell, oh, my goodness, you're so smart. That has, do you ever, when Fran needs to stop and slow down and recharge, what do you do for that? Because you, I can tell you're brilliant. The perception probably isn't accurate either. There could be a perception where you're like, go, 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 go all the time. And I'm guessing you don't go, go, go all the time, because I find as people who need to go, 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 they also have this element of them that is absolutely calm.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, thank you for saying that. I don't look at myself that way. I mean, but I'm humbled and appreciate the compliment. I just feel that I have a passion for life, and I love to explain that to people in a way that they can understand, and that's pretty much where I just kind of leave my that area of that. But as far as to answer your question, yeah, the way that I relax is that I do a couple of things. One, I love spending time with friends. That is a big relaxing time for me, to just spend time, look at pictures, you know, just talk and just really enjoy life with somebody. The other way is, I live in a very beautiful area. We live in the mountains, and so not this morning because things were rushed, but I will do it later on. I do some physical activity every morning. So, like, this morning I only did 500 jumping jacks on the trampoline, which is not my relaxing exercise. That's just my release exercise. And that's also, trampoline is very good on the little trampoline. It's very good on a cellular level. The bouncing motion actually helps the cells. But anyway, what I usually do is I do a half-hour walk that is, you know, I do it really early in the morning before anybody's up, and I will just walk in the woods and just make sure as I'm walking that I am repeating to myself, live in the here and now, so that no matter, because sometimes, you know, your mind starts going, okay, when I go back, I'm going to do this, and then I got to call this, and I go, capo. Where are you? And I literally say it to myself, Capo, where are you? You're in the woods. What time is it now? Where are you? Here. What do you see? I see the snow on the ground. And if I see myself getting unfocused, I purposely bring myself back to that and ask myself those questions.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than exercising and the whole time going, I've got to do the laundry and feed the cat and take the kids here and make dinner. And then, oh, there's a birthday party next week. And, you know, you're sitting there.
Yeah, because what you're doing is,
it's like, wait.
You're not even, the whole time, you're not even enjoying what you do, and then you're like, did I exercise even? Because you just weren't there. Your physical body was there, but weren't you weren't there. And I get, you know, obviously, you wrote the article about me that is on my website. I actually have it posted on my website. But this is the first time you and I are really, like, talking.
Yeah,
we're
getting to know each other. Yeah, we've never talked before. I do that on purpose, too. I told you that. Just so I can get to know you without having to know everything about you. It's more fun that way to me.
Yeah, but the thing is, just, like, we could see where our common, you know, our common ground is. And I think I would like to tell your listeners, because I believe just by listening to you that I think they would enjoy this story, so I kind of want to share it with everybody. This is my and normally I don't. I have to feel comfortable to share the story, but this is my latest book is called Hope Fill the City of Light. Now, I've written 18 books, and all those other books that I wrote were a conscious effort. Oh, I'm going to write a book on New York and all the things that happened in New York. Oh, I'm going to write a book on adrenaline adventures, blah, blah, blah. But this one book happened to me in a very interesting way. I was in the middle of writing Adrenaline Adventures, and at that point in time, my mom was still alive. She died in 2008. And what happened was, it was 4 o'clock in the morning, and I wasn't living up here yet. I was still living in Queens. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, and I hear this voice say to me, Fran, get up. You have to write a book. And I'm like, what are you it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know who you are. I'm already writing a book. I don't know what you're talking about. And they're like, no, you need to write a book. It's called Hope Fill the City of Light. We have the story. We're going to give it to you. And so now, of course, I'm thinking, all right, I'm obviously dreaming. I'm going to get up. I'm going to turn on the light. And so I turn on the light. I look around. I don't see anybody. I went, okay, that was a strange dream. Turn off the light. Go back to sleep, or at least I think I do, and I hear, Fran, you have to get up and write this book. We have the whole story for you. It has an important message that has to get out to the world. And I'm like, okay, I am sorry. I don't know who you are, and I don't know about this book. I am on deadline for another book, and I don't mean to argue with you. I appreciate this, but cannot do it. And so I'm arguing with this voice. The voice is very persistent. It tells me the name. It says, write the name down. So I write the name down. Hope for the City of Light. I said, you know, I'll, you know, and then I go back to sleep. I try to push it out of my head. And it says, it has a message you have to give to the world. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I go to sleep. I get up next morning. I get my mom to the train station, get my son to school, have to get the car fixed, take my computer ready to work on the next chapter of Adrenaline Adventures. I have never in my entire writing career had writer's block. I get to the place. I say to the guy, can I set up a little area so I could sit down and work on my book? Because, you know, it's going to take about 3 hours for you to fix my car. He says, yeah, sure. I start to type the next chapter in Adrenaline Adventures, whatever it was, about sharks or whatever. I'm start to write. And my hands physically cannot type. I'm like, okay, this is really bizarre. So I start to type again. I'm going, I'm going to waste my time here for 3 hours and not write. So I'm sitting there trying to get the chapter out. Won't go. So I said, all right, what was the name of that book? Let me write the name of that book down at least so I don't forget it. So I write, Hope Fill the City of Light. And I have to tell you, for the next 3 hours, I literally do not remember what happened. I know I was typing. That is all I know. I was typing. Words were coming out. When I wrote the word the end, the guy came up to me and said, Fran, your car's ready. He goes, I got to say, it was a little weird. You didn't even look like you were breathing. He goes, you didn't move. You didn't drink water. You didn't get up to go to the bathroom. He goes, every time we looked at you, you were like a zombie just typing. I said, I think I wrote a book. I have no clue what the book is about. I don't even know if it makes sense. I said, if you ask me what it's about, I honestly can't tell you. So I didn't look at it for 3-4 weeks because I, quite frankly, just thought it was going to be some rambling, you know, of somebody. I didn't know what it was going to be. So later on, I said, well, I guess I should just read what's on the computer. And when I started to read it, I was actually really shocked because the story was a very simple story. It made sense. And it was basically about 4 people, a widowed mother, an old man, a businessman, and a small boy who always gets bullied. And they all live in this small town, and all of them are discouraged. So the same night, they all pray for guidance, and an angel of light comes to each of them and tells them this tiny little thing they have to do that could transform their lives. And each of them doesn't think they're capable of it, but the angel assures them that they all are. So they all do it, and each of their actions has a ripple effect on the town's occupants, and it changes the entire town. And so basically it's a story of love, of life, of hope, and of following your dreams, and how simple little change can change your whole life and other people's.
That book has angels around it. Every time you say that name, I get the chills. It's a weird thing. Oh, yeah. When you say Hopeful, the City of Light, it gives me the chills. Isn't that bizarre? That book has little angels surrounding it or something. I have no idea. That's a cool book.
Yeah, so the book is out in e-form. And
yeah,
then I just...
Good, because, by the way, not...
It's weird that you said that, because I swear to you, telling this story, I tell the story, you know, I don't tell all the time, but I tell the story, and you telling me that you got chills just made me get chills down my leg.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's weird. That never happened when I told this story before.
Yeah, I got chills when you were saying that. I'm like, okay, there's something about that. There's people around right now or something listening. I'm not sure. Freaking real.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah.
Do you normally see that type of stuff?
I'm kind of like intuitive a little bit. I have moments
You're an intuitive.
Of stuff like
okay.
that. Yeah, kind of just, I don't know that it's fully developed in me or anything, but I don't know. I just can sense things sometimes or whatever. Yeah. And I have I don't say this very loud very often, but just strange occurrences here and there, kind of like that, like what you're describing.
Well, Yeah, like, honestly, if somebody said, I would be like, yeah, right, a book's going to come to me in the middle of the night, I'm going to start typing, no. Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? Because I'm a little bit, I don't want to say skeptical, because I do believe in God, and I pray to Mother Mary, and my mom passed, and I get signs from her and everything, but I literally have to be hit over the head with a sign, and it never comes to me, it comes to other people who tell me, because I am just like, mom, send me a sign, and I am telling you, I don't see them, and people will be like, Fran, your mom and Mother Mary came to me and told me blah, blah, blah. And it's so funny, because now I'm so used to it that I kind of just say it out loud, whereas if I would have heard myself say, oh, yeah, you're going to just, like, kind of say this stuff on a radio show just like.
Yeah,
but
I know.
The thing is, I just say to myself, you know what, this is the reality, this is what's happening, and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
people can believe it, people don't have to believe it. Go along your merry way. It doesn't bother me.
Exactly. Whatever makes you happy in your life and do, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Yeah, I have.
But the thing is, the book is the book is coming out in audio form. Literally, I went into the studio about 2 weeks ago, so they're editing it now. So people could go to my website, francapo.com, and if they want to hear it, I wasn't planning on it. I do voiceovers. When I started to do the reading of the book, I was going to do it as a straight read, and instead I wound up acting out the 16. It's got 16 characters in the book. That's what I'm talking about. I never would have dreamed of a book with 16 characters.
It sounds like a good movie. Actually, when you were describing it, sounded like almost like it needed a one sheet and to be pitched all over for a movie or something. It sounds like
a cool movie.
So
many people are saying this. This is like weird, but it's coming in phases. Like people are first saying, you know, wow, you know, you should get the book out there. Then I was like, all right, I'll do it as an e-book. And then for my birthday, people asked what I wanted for my birthday. I said, all I want is everybody on my birthday to just buy a copy of the e-book, which is only $4.95 on Amazon. I said, that's all I want for my birthday. So everybody did that. Then people started saying, oh, I read the book and I could hear it as an audiobook. So I was like, all right, I'll go to audiobook. Now people are starting to say movie, so I'm like, all right, after the audiobook comes out, I'll figure out how to make it into a movie. So I'm just going to do step by step.
Sure.
Yeah.
And isn't it neat how this is always hard to articulate for me, so help me along with this, but isn't it neat how things compound in a cool way? Like one thing will happen, and then another thing will happen, and another thing, and then like, you just never know, like, who you're going to meet and what gift they bring to your life or their life. Or it's just bizarre sometimes. And so, do you ever meet people and you go, I feel like I've known you forever, and you barely have to talk?
Yeah, the thing is this. I think once you open that door and allow the first, like right now, so, yeah. like, if you and I were just talking about my fast talking and about the books I wrote and about my coaching and about my articles and stuff like that and never touched on the topic of spirituality, I would not have known that you were an intuitive. But because the conversation comes up, then what happens, I believe, is because we're open people, then God or whoever starts going, okay, they're ready for the next step, and then that gets sent. And then each time, because you're grateful for it, and I do believe that if you live an attitude with gratitude that more things come, then I believe that when that happens, then the next thing, and then all of a sudden you feel like everything is falling into place when I do believe we were put on this planet to be happy, but because people make it so difficult, you know, I have to get this to be happy, I have to get that to be happy, and have all these, you know, conditions on it, that they're not open to it. They're open to it, but they don't know how to obtain it. And so then once you're open to it and the things seem to flow to you, you're like, wow. Oh, my gosh. And then I met this person, and then that person knew that person, and then this person knew that person. And then it just feels like this is the way it was supposed to be. When all along, I do believe it's there. It's just like you have a blinder on, and you just don't realize it's right on the other side of that wall. And if you just learn how to lift the wall, the floodgates of positive energy and all beautiful stuff will flow in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I have another question for you here, because I'm reading a little bit more about you. You've been on all these different radio shows and TV shows. We're very blessed to have you with us, especially for a full hour getting to talk with you. What was that like the very first time you were ever on like a major network anything? Do you remember that moment, like the very first moment where you were like on, you know, in a national?
National, because I remember my first one, and I remember my national one. The first national one was let me just think what the first national one was. The first national one was definitely Larry King Live. And the way that that happened, again, it's just, you know, being open, was I was working. Everything in my life kind of happens with the just say yes and figure it out later attitude. So what happened was I was working at a radio station, WBLS-FM, and I was writing comedy for them. And then kidding around one day, I said I could do a really cool Mae West impression, but I called the character June East, Mae West's long-lost sister. So the guy, Sergio Dean, the DJ at the time, just flings the weather and traffic copy at me. The little red tally light came on, so I was like, ooh, the weather and traffic is. And in the 30 seconds I happened and in the 30 seconds I happened to do it, this lady from the Daily News called up and said, oh, I'm doing a story on weather and traffic. How long you been doing it? And I wasn't going to tell her 30 seconds. So I said, oh, I've been doing it a while. So she said, I'd like to do a story on you. What are you planning on doing next? And I didn't have a next, but I had the lady from the Daily News. So I said, oh, I'm thinking of breaking a world record. So she said, really, for what? But I didn't have a for what. So I said, oh, I can't tell you because it'll jinx it. And she said, well, if you decide you want to tell me, the article has to go in by 6 o'clock today. So, give me a call. I ran out, bought a Guinness book, started looking through it, going, oh, my gosh, what record can I break? I saw Fast Talking, and I was like, well, I have no clue, but it's like 5 to 6, and her article goes in. So if I'm going to do it, I better do it now. So I called her up and I said, and I literally had to go on stage in like 10 minutes because I was doing stand-up. So I was like, all right, I figured I'd let you know. I'm thinking of breaking the record for fast talking. She goes, what's the record at? And I'm looking in the book. I go, the record's 552 words a minute. She goes, what are you at? And I went, 550. I said, those last two words are a killer. So she prints it in the paper. And the very next day, the Larry King Live people called me up and asked me to go on the show and break the record. And to be honest with you, I didn't know who Larry King was. I heard cable, and I'm like, hey, is this some kind of porn thing? They're like, oh, I know. It's a national show. So I was like, all right, what if I don't break it? She goes, Larry doesn't care whether you break it or not. He just cares that you try it on his show. So I was like, all right. So I called up Guinness. I was like, what do you have to do? They said something of Shakespeare, the Bible. I had a prayer that my mom had taught me from the Bible. And I figured, what's the worst that happens? Worst that happens, I look like a fool on national TV. The best that happens, I break a world record. So I practiced because I knew I had the people coming, I practiced for 5 hours. And at that time, I went on the show and broke the record doing 585 words a minute. And then I rebroke it at the Guinness Museum in Vegas doing 603.32 words a minute, which is 11 words a second. And that's how I broke it. It's a very technical record. You have a machine called the Lexicon Compressor that takes the words, slows it down, but doesn't distort it like a tape recorder. Then they have an Olympic timer time you to the hundredth of a second. And then they have a speech analyst analyze every single syllable. So if you even miss one syllable, the entire record is null and void. So So I did it, and then, like I said, and then, I guess since we're talking about fast talking, I could. Oh, you know what? I wasn't planning on this, but
I got to see the time. Yeah, we have plenty.
Let me do a little fast talking.
But I don't know what that even sounds like.
That's what I was
like
thinking.
Auctioneer.
Wait, hold on. No, because auctioneers don't actually say all the words. I'm actually trying to see if I have the. Where is that book? Hold on a second, because I brought it with me to New Zealand, and I figured I could do that for you guys. Where's my New Zealand thing?
Well, let me talk a little bit more about you. While you're looking, I'll cover for you while you're looking for that.
Yeah. Well, you know what I could do? I mean, yeah, go ahead. Keep asking me questions.
No, just go ahead. You can...
Well, what I could do is I was going to read The Night Before Christmas for you, but I can't seem to find that one. So I would have to read instead, I'll just do The Three Little Pigs for you because I can't find The Night Before Christmas. So it goes like this. Once you have the three little pigs, one little pig like to sing, the second little pig like to dance, the third little pig like to sit and think, then a big red wolf come along, then a big, never been chit-chit-chit, hopping up by himself, you have, puts the next house, then a big, let me in, never been chit-chit-chit, stuff you have to do, but forgot to climb down the chimney, pigs had about boiling water, the wolf and they whips it. Tomorrow, war and peace. There you go.
Gosh, how do you do that?
Practice for 5 hours, no.
my gosh, I bet.
I wish I could find this book. I literally have not unpacked from New Zealand yet, and I'm like going, where's that book? I could read it to her.
Yeah, no, that's so cool. So all from just weather and just that's just bizarre. And, you know, it's even a little bit more bizarre, too, is I asked you that question not knowing what that answer was going to be.
which question?
Go with that. Like what your first national...
Oh, yeah, and then it would just led into into the fast talking, yeah.
Yeah, what did Larry King think?
Oh, it was really funny because I actually was on his show, and I was on his show for an hour, which, I mean, when you think about it, that's a lot of airtime for somebody who's never been on national TV before. So he had said to me, and it's funny because he was like going, you know, Fran, we're from the same genealogy, you know, and he's like saying all these things. He was asking me all these questions, and I was like, geez, I've never been on a national show. And then on top of it, I'm getting an hour of airtime.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool, though. Yeah, and it was on Larry King, you know. It was like, wow, this is, pretty intense here. So,
he's actually my idol. You know that?
No,
he is my idol. Here's why. He reminds me, and no offense to his age or anything like that, my grandfather. He's so similar to my grandfather. My grandfather was a radio announcer, and my grandfather—that's where my love of radio comes from. I used to sit with my grandfather with his little transistor radio, and he would say, "Someday, kid, I'm going to own my own radio station," and he broadcast with Ronald Reagan and did all these amazing things. And his name was Charles Niles, and really just a cool. My grandfather was so cool, but he is. And he's not alive anymore, and we miss him dearly. But he reminds me so much of Larry King. They look alike, the same glasses, the same everything.
I mean, naturally you're going to have that because, you know, especially because it brings, you know, when you see somebody that reminds you of somebody, it's just all those feelings come back. You know, I mean, there's no way for it not to. And, I mean, I just... He was so nice. I mean, he was. I mean, so just so you know, I don't know if you've ever met him in person.
No.
He was just such a lovely man. I mean, yes. He was sincerely interested in, mm-hmm. you know, in what I had to say, and he was he knew it was my first time, you know, on a national show anyway, and he was just great. So you picked a good person to think was a, you know what I mean, is a good guy. And as we were talking, I did wind up finding, of course, the night before Christmas.
Let me just say this. For anybody listening, we're going to cut off live, but we're going to continue to record for just a few more minutes here so we finish the show up properly and we can hear Fran talk again as the world's fastest talking female. I love that. Clocked at 603.32 words per minute. That's crazy fast. And so we're going to keep talking. And if you want to listen to the show at the end of the show, just come back to blogtalkradio.com/besteveryou, and the show's available for free replay all the time. It just stays up here, and you can listen and share as many times as you want. So, but this show, Fran, is secretly sort of modeled after Larry King. People ask me, well, what kind of show do you have? And I'm like, it's a talk show, and it's just one guest. And it's just focused on that guest and, like, everything about them. And that's kind of when I watch Larry King stuff, that's kind of the way I feel. He just gets submerged in his guest. Just completely
and
wants
that,
to know everything
you know what,
about
and
them.
That's such a, and that's such a great thing because often if you like someone and you see them, you always get just, like, the little snippet. But then you get to know somebody like, wow, the person also did this and this, not just what they're really famous for. Then you really get to know a person, and I think that that's when, you know, you bond with your audience because then you find your similarities. It's not just like, ah, she's a fast talker. Ah, she wrote a couple of books. It's like, now they know, hey, this lady, her hears voices in the middle of the night.
It sometimes bothers me, like when they have a star on or something like that, and they're there to promote a movie, and they talk for like 5 minutes. And you're like, wait a minute. I want to know why they're there. You know, why they did that or whatever.
Right.
It's not in depth enough for me. So I love in depth conversations with people. All right. So I want to mention to people too. Your latest book is called Hopeville, the City of Light. And Fran has got an audiobook coming out as well. And her website, again, is francapo.com. That's FRANCAPO.com. And we're going to have the pleasure of you reading one more time for us before we go.
Okay. And this is perfect book, and it's called The Night Before Christmas. Here we go. Just the night before Christmas, all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even the mouse and stockings were hung over the chimney, but here in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children nestled snug in their beds, and vision of sugar plum dancing in their heads, and Mama and a kerchief of eye in my cap, but just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there rose such a clatter, I sprang to the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew, a flash swap in the shutters that drew up the stairs. The moon on the breast of the new fallen snow gave lustre to midday objects below, when what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little drive sliding and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagle and courses they came, and he whistled and shouted and call him by name. Now dash and dance and the president makes it coming to keep it down and books at the top of the porch, the top of the wall. Now dash away all. As the dry leaves up before the wild hurricane fly where they meet with the obstacle mouse of the sky, so up to the house top the courses they flew with the sleigh of the floors and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof of the prancing and pouring of each little hoof. As I drew my hand and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung in his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes had they twinkled. His dimples how merry, and his cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as snow. The stump of his pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke of his circled head like a wreath. He had a broad little face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, but right jolly, oh well, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of the eye, a twist, and said, soon know me, gave I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled with the stockings, and turned with a jerk, and laying his fingers the side of his nose, and giving a nod up the chimney, he rose. He sprang to the sled, to his team, gave a whistle, and away he flew like the down of a thistle, but I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
I love it. That is so neat you can do that. I wonder what the world's slowest talking person sounds like.
I don't know. They're probably still talking.
All right. Well, happy holidays to you. I so appreciate you being on the show with us. It's been just fascinating getting to know you. And Spencer, hello.
Thank you, and I loved it, and Merry Christmas, and Happy Holidays to all of your listeners.
Awesome. All right, take care, everybody. Have a great day. Thank you, Fran.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.